to Prickly Pens Podcast. This is episode 81. We are three friends, three writers, sharing not only our writing journeys, but a window into our conversations around the art of storytelling in the various formats like books, films, and video games, and also selective topics that make us ponder or piss us off. Let's start with introductions.
Hi, I'm Gabby.
Hi, I'm Julia.
And I'm Michelle. Welcome to Prickly Pens Podcast, and
Take it away, Gabby.
So this week we're talking about The Ritual, which is a 2017 horror film and a, I forgot when the book came out, but it's also a book. The book is from 2011, written by Adam Neville, a British supernatural horror author, and which... I looked him up. He just started doing self-publishing. He's been traditionally published, but recently he's done
more. Oh, he switched to indie?
Yeah.
Yay!
Because of freedom in marketing.
Yay!
And things like that. So.
Indie authors unite.
Yay!
But yeah, I want to talk about the movie and the book.
Well, the theme of horror was because...
It's October. It's spooky month. Yeah, so the next couple episodes will be talking about horror. despite the fact that I've gotten already some early Christmas commercials. So.
Oh. Yeah. It's Halloween at the end of the month.
Yeah, Halloween and then Thanksgiving and then Christmas.
And then Christmas.
Yeah. Most of the world, it's like summer, Christmas. I mean, there's other holidays for most countries, but...
Yeah, I think Canada has Thanksgiving, too.
Yeah, they're Thanksgiving. And Korea has Chuseok, which is translated as Korean Thanksgiving, but it's not Thanksgiving. It's not like Thanksgiving, but it is a family holiday. But yeah, anyway, the 2017 film stars Rafe Spall, Arshar Ali, Robert James Collier, and Sam Troughton, and directed by David Bruckner. And at least I've watched it now maybe two times, but... My mom said it was also produced by Andy Serkis, which is
Smeagol. Smeagol Gollum.
Yeah, Smeagol, if you don't know who
His name was on there. I was like, I know him.
And Caesar from Planet of the Apes. He played the head ape. it's a horror film, and I wanted to talk about it because I saw a clip of originally the creature design. Someone had a clip online about the creature, and I was like, oh my gosh, this looks amazing. I want to see this film. So I watched it. It's on Netflix right now as of when we are recording. I don't know by the time this episode comes out if it will still be on Netflix.
But is it Netflix or HBO?
Yeah, it was Netflix.
It's okay. Netflix for sure.
Okay.
So, but I think Netflix owns the international rights, I think. So it might still be there by the time this episode comes out, so you can go watch The Ritual.
I'm a little bit traumatized by you saying you saw the creature and you wanted to see it. You thought it was amazing. I'm like the opposite. I was like, oh my God. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was just... No.
Well, I love production. I love production stuff. And then I love creature design in movies and that in different things. That's what usually hooks me to want to see a horror movie just how they made the creature scary.
Well, also when she had, when Gabby was doing in some of our earlier episodes, we were focused on fantasy creatures or fantasy monsters. And one of the monsters that we talked about, or she talked about, was the Wendigo.
Yeah.
And when I saw the thumbnail of the creature in this, it reminded me a little bit of the Wendigo.
Yeah.
And so that was, I was curious as to, and that was creepy.
Yeah,
the Wendigo was creepy.
Wendigos are creepy.
I wanted to know more about this creature that is supposed to be in a Swedish forest.
Yeah. So the book and movie takes place in Sweden and very northern part of Sweden where there's a lot of untouched forests and rolling hills and all that. And it's about four friends that are going to... The movie and the book's plot are slightly different for their motivations to go on a hike in Sweden. Oh. In the book, it is a reunion amongst friends of old, maybe college friends. So the relationships are more strained.
Yeah, they're now adults. They're now fully adults.
Yeah, it's like going to visit your college friends again.
Yeah.
And then going on a trip together. So it's like, yeah, you get along, but you're so different now than you were when you were 18. Not, right. You know, and everything's not going to gel together well. And then the movie, on the other hand, they are close friends that still hang out and stuff. And one of their friends dies in a robbery at the beginning of the film. And the other friend he's like in the convenience store when it happens. But he freezes up out of fear, and the robbers kill the friend, and he witnesses it, so he's traumatized, and then they decide to go on a hike as, a kind of send-off to the friend that passed away.
And that's not giving away anything.
No, it happens literally in the first 5 minutes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's the first 5 minutes.
It's just, the inciting incident
why
for
they go into the
movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Gabby and I had discussions about whether... Especially if you haven't been around people for years, you know, from your college years, would you go on a long Swedish hike into the forest? I mean,
hard pass.
Yeah,
right. I'm like, I'm sweet up at a bar.
Let's have a coffee. My memories. My memories of my high school friends or even my college friends. It's like, no, we have great memories, but. I'm not going to hike with you. I haven't seen you in years. Right, I'm not just going to be like, let's go on a hike.
Because part of the challenges to this hike is the fact that some aren't in shape, which is, that's natural too.
And that's me.
Fast.
Yes.
So again, why would I commit to a multi-day hiking
a multi-day
trip?
Thing.
I think
yeah.
the way they set it up in the movie made more sense. It seemed like you said that their relationship was much more like they were still in touch and still on friendly terms, and then they were speaking about what should we do this time, you know, as if they had done
They've
many
always
trips
been
prior,
doing stuff
yeah, right yeah, like yeah, where's yeah. our locale yeah. and then the inciting yeah. incident happens yeah. right
so yeah in the book I think they meet each other. They kind of meet each other once a year for drinks. So it's they do kind of keep up, but they definitely it didn't feel like the film. The film felt there was more camaraderie amongst them, and they actually hung out outside of just this one trip
right,
a year.
Right, exactly. Okay.
And the movie focused a lot on the main character, whose name is Luke.
And if you saw Hot Fuzz, he is one of
the Andes.
City detectives with Olivia
Coleman.
Oh, yeah, she's
forgot she was
Simon Pegg. Nick Frost.
Yeah, with Simon Pegg and all that. But
Yeah,
he's one of the, the blonde one. But he's one of the Andes.
I watch that movie a lot, so even though it's old and I'm making a reference, I know the man probably has done several movies since Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
That's your go-to.
That's my go-to.
Yeah, when I saw him, I was like, oh, he's in Hot Fuzz.
Because that's what she said. She said, remember the detectives in Hot Fuzz? And I was like, yeah, the blonde one and the one with the mustache.
Right.
He's the blonde one.
So, but yeah, the movie focuses on Luke, who's the main character, and he, like I said, the movie and the book, I guess the plot, inciting incident is different, but they end up, you know, hiking in Sweden. One of them named, I should say all the friends' names. The main character's name is Luke. Both in the film and the book, he's the main guy that you're following. There's Hutch, who is the oldest character, but he's kind of the most athletic. He's kind of into hiking already, so he's the one who suggested the trip in the book. In the movie, it's the friend who dies suggests the trip, and they do that in memory to him. They go on the trip in memory. And then there's Dom, who is annoying. In the book,
both book and movie, Dom
he's so
is
annoying. He's punchable. He's so punchable.
Yeah.
And then you have Phil, who is very different from the book in the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's very different. Yeah.
Personality-wise.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Even look-wise, he's different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm saying that's what was different. Yeah, is that in... Because I think in the movies, the writer, director, whoever did it, or responsible for doing it, did a harder character, types than in the book. The book was a little softer in your character types, but in like the archetypes of the characters were stronger in the movie, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you don't have time to develop and so on. Because in the books, it's very introspective. It's very in the head of Luke.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
So how do you bring all that internal dialogue or internal
onto the
model
screen, right?
All in those thoughts.
Book also is like 60 chapters, so they have you have time to
to delve.
It's very very descriptive.
Very
descriptive in the book.
Yeah, and meanwhile the movie you have you've got it, less than 2 hours to
because you said it was an hour and 34 minutes.
Yeah, so it's a short movie. So you don't have much time to...
Yeah, the book is 62 chapters.
Yeah, to focus on people. Yeah. But, so for the movies, they kind of, like I said, they focus on Luke's character who has basically trauma or PTSD from the friend's death and seeing the friend die. So he keeps having memories of the...
incident.
Of the death.
Right.
Yeah. And I found it interesting because throughout the film, you kind of see very much emphasis on fear and what fear will do to people. And you see that through the four friends. Like, he freezes.
Right. He's
someone who freezes in...
into inaction. Almost can't, right?
Yeah, it takes inaction. And because I was looking up, and apparently, you know how people say fight or flight all the time? There's more than just fight or flight. There's, like, 5 responses that humans do. Yeah. Fight or flight is just... the top 2, but that's not the only 2.
Oh, I did not know.
Yeah, so you have fight or flight, you have freeze, which is what he does, you have fawn. Fawn is when you basically try to charm, like, if someone's robbing you, you try to charm the robber.
I remember
to not get
this,
hurt.
Yeah, this woman did that, a prisoner at a court escaped and
by charming her kidnapper.
Got to an apartment and broke into her apartment, and she charmed him basically into surrendering. Yeah. She talked to him, kind of do a therapy talk.
Yeah. It's almost like a reverse psychology. Like if someone's robbing you and you're like, oh, I've always wanted to be a robber, let me join you. It's gets you out of
the situation. The incident.
Yeah. So that's what fawning is. And then there's flop, where you basically pretend you're dead. It's almost like,
I shouldn't laugh.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to bring up a real life example, is when the school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, and one of the kids played dead by putting blood around on them.
Yeah.
And the person didn't shoot them.
You do what you need to survive. So,
yeah. Right.
Whatever
so,
your response
I mean, but that was so
is,
smart
yeah.
for
That's
a kid.
Clever. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, like I said, there's more than the 2. So I think most people think, like, just fight. But when you're in the actual situation, it's like, would you, though?
Yeah.
Or it's like, are people really fight? Most people don't have any desire to really fight.
I remember we were in a grocery store, and it was... being robbed, the cashier was being robbed, and I had Gabby with me, and I ran to one of the aisles because I was in a cashier line, but next to it, and I ran back to the aisle and then crouched. So I did not play the hero for the cashier.
Oh, please!
I did not see what the person looked like. I just could hear everything, and so it was more of protect. My idea was to protect her with my body.
Yeah, your child. How old was she? Like,
she was probably maybe about 6 or 7.
Oh, my God.
She was in the cart at the top.
Oh, Gabby.
The part where the kids are.
Do you remember?
I probably wasn't even in that then. No. I don't remember a thing. No.
Okay. I just pulled her and covered her with my body, and we hid in the aisle. Everybody else ducked.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'm more of a freezer. I tend to freeze. If something happens, I freeze, and then it's like I can't move.
Yeah.
I can't do anything until, like, I can maybe push my body, like, okay, run.
Right. Yeah.
But I am not a fighter. I would not. Yeah. I'm not one to fight.
Well, I'm more of a confronter. We've talked about this when my house was being broken into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they basically, you know, slammed into the door and just busted it open. And I got pissed because I was like, mm-hmm. who's going to clean up this mess? And I started yelling, like, what the, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I called my brother to complain, and he's like, call the police. You know, so it's not like, my response didn't, I mean, I'm thinking my response didn't really make sense for the situation because I didn't really understand what was happening.
But it was instinctive. Fear response is not, you don't think about, the whole point is that something happens and what you do now, like, in that second, you know?
Right.
Because the way they set it up in the movie, it was just by chance this happened.
Yeah.
That they walked in on a robbery.
Yeah.
That they didn't know was happening.
Oh, right.
So.
And to tell you the truth, I watched it.
Going into
I
more.
Watched it like twice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the first time I watched it, I didn't like the movie because of the response to the main character mm-hmm. had. But, you know, now that I'm older, you know, and mm-hmm. I understand, you know, like trauma better and, you know, what could happen. And, you know, I was more, I don't know, forgiving of that. Like, you mm-hmm. know, I can't really judge people for what their response is at that moment in time. So, and I liked it the second time better.
Well, you know, we were talking too about the reactions from the various different friends, because that's the inciting incident that, to me, some of them were hypocritical in their reaction,
especially Dom.
And like you said, you're judging when you weren't in the situation. Yeah. You know, people like his friends were judging.
Yeah.
But they weren't in the situation.
Because Dom says in the film, which is a very soft spoiler, I guess he was saying to Luke, he's like, oh, you had no blood on you. You walked to the convenience store with nothing on you. Meanwhile, he doesn't know what was happening at the convenience store because the two guys were, like, drug addicts. Like, they looked like they were strung out, and then they had machetes. So I'm like, in what world am I supposed to
And they had already beaten up the cashier.
Yeah, they already had nothing to lose. So it's like, so what, there's two friends with their heads bashed in?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, I'm confused what they're supposed to do.
That kind of thing happened in, there was a Starbucks in Georgetown, and that morning, in the morning, people came, the workers came and discovered slain Starbucks employees, and after they were finished with the investigation, and this took like over a year or two, they came to the conclusion that the manager had probably resisted the robbers, and in return they killed everybody that was working there. And so it's like, you might feel that in the time, you might feel a little heroic in that you aren't going to give them what they want or whatever, which is why stores now are very much telling their employees,
just give up,
don't run after them. Don't chase them down. Don't fight them over the stuff.
It's not worth it.
And, I remember two employees got fired for, it was Lululemon, stores, and they got fired, and then they tried to sue, and the judge ruled against them because it's in the rule. Because it's not that important. They have insurance to cover their losses.
Yeah, really,
you do not
isn't.
Have to.
It's not your mom and pop where
it's right.
Yeah,
it's not, that's something. Not your job.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you don't know what's going to trigger these crazy, doped up, high people who are doing crazy things with machetes.
Yeah.
If they want your wedding ring, it's just a thing. It can be replaced. Yeah. It's not worth your life, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but
I mean, that was like one not particular incident. It's just one of those people who teaches like self-defense, and he's like, if you are gonna try to, I guess, fight a bad guy or whoever, he's like, pretty much, like, you're act as if you're fighting to the death. Yeah. Because don't pretend as if it's going to be a movie and they're going to stop halfway through.
Yeah.
Right. No. You hit him hard enough. He's like, no, they're going to fight you like they're going to kill you.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, Brian says, he's always like, if you are going to do, if you have a weapon, use it. Like, you don't threaten, you know, stand there and talk. if you're going to use it, you use it, and you don't stop using it. You know, right. It's like you go all in. If you know you can't do it, then you know, and then you can use it and then run like heck. But So anyway, it's like diverting from the movie.
But that's part of the plot of the film is again
how they react to
fear.
Yeah,
which is important because the monster uses fear control people.
Right.
So they enter the forest, this forest in Sweden, because Dom, he hurts his knee. I think he twists it or something.
He tore his meniscus, which I knew. Yeah. I pinpointed because that's what I recently did to my own knee.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago. 2.5 weeks ago. Whatever.
Yeah. So they have to cut through. Okay, they don't have to cut through. Hutch, he's in charge of the map, and he's like, oh, if we cut through, we can get to the lodge that they're registered at faster. And then it takes off like a day of the trip. And Dom is like, yeah, because he doesn't want to walk on his leg, which is understandable. But I'm like, if there are no shortcuts on the map, because he's like, oh, a shortcut. Most hiking trails will show you where a trail is. There's no trail going through that forest. If there's no trail going through that forest, don't make one. You're not supposed to do it.
Well, so. Also, too, the first time I watched it, I was like, what a baby. Whatever. You tore your whatever. Like, please.
I mean, I was like that,
but
too.
But now that
like,
I've done it, I was like, oh, legit. Right. He's in a lot of pain. They should be more sympathetic towards him, and he's not on any pain meds, so.
I think because he's already so whiny.
He was so whiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was already, I think they're already half annoyed. So anything he did after that was.
Oh, I did want to ask, though, because in the movie, he was the one that kept saying, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault in the beginning. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then, like you said, he's the one that was like later on. He's like, you're the one that came out. You didn't have a drop of blood. And it was like, was it like that in the book too? Where?
Well, in the book, there's no friend that dies. They just go because it's a reunion trip.
Oh, no way.
For the four of them.
Right.
So that's that
incident.
Yeah. So
that's the difference.
So I feel like the movie gave you a harder motivation point for the characters than the book did. So, but in the book, because you're in Luke's head, you are feeling his conflicts is with the different people, like what he's feeling
toward each one.
And what he perceives. Because he's like thinking, well, this is what they think about me, or because they're successful, or you know, they've got family and stuff like that. He's a bachelor, and they have they're married and kids and things like that.
Oh, gotcha.
So that's the conflict. It's more of an interpersonal, relationship type conflict.
Yeah, and. In the book, it's very atmospheric, the forest. Like, when they go in, it feels like the forest is leading them away from the exit all the time. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the movie, I don't have that feeling as much. It feels dense. I mean, the forest in the movie is very much dense and feels almost like infinite, where it's just not ending. So there's going to be a light spoiler for one section of the story that I really want to talk about. In both the book and the movie, they end up, like I said, in the forest.
Right.
They realize the sun's going down, so they're like, okay, we got to find a place to sleep. It starts raining, and they're in Sweden, so it's cold rain. and they find a house, like an abandoned house. And it doesn't have that cute Swedish house look.
Oh, it's definitely
it's like
not.
An abandoned, yeah, it's abandoned, abandoned wooden shack.
And I think in the book, these are houses, I guess, for like when you're hiking and you want to rest for the night, or
like a hunting
or a hunting lodge kind of thing where you
think
go in.
Well, I think in the book it was more of,
owned.
No.
Okay.
It seemed more like people lived in them, and now they don't.
Abandoned, right?
Right.
Abandoned. So you had that abandoned feel to it.
Yeah, it felt. Well, but this, it felt
I
like
mean,
maybe,
the movie was decrepit.
Yeah,
the thing wasn't even.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're abandoned maybe in like the maybe the 50s.
Yeah,
like when maybe the area was more bigger and logging, because I think he talks about there was some logging and then it stopped.
Yeah,
so maybe they lived there.
Right.
But they're it's abandoned completely. Like, I think there's like a what are they called? Iron, not iron. Like old school fireplace,
yes.
You know, yeah, old school stove, you know, they have, there's the, he sees a gun on the wall and it's like a bolt action rifle.
Yeah, because there's no bathroom inside.
Yeah. So it's like an old school,
right.
Old school building. But so they go in, they have to break in because it was locked or closed or whatever. But Luke doesn't want to go inside. He's like, I'm not feeling it. But he ends up going because the other three are like, it's freezing. We're not sleeping out in the rain, you know, with our tents. They'll get soaked. So they go in, they look around. It's like, is it abandoned and kind of spooky? Upstairs, though, is an effigy. So in the book, the effigy is like a goat shape.
Oh.
I think it has a goat head. Meanwhile, in the movie, the effigy has no head, but his arms are antlers and his feet are like hands, human hands.
Yeah.
That are at the bottom. So it's creepy. They're all like, that's creepy. Let's all sleep downstairs.
Yeah.
Hello.
And so, they sleep downstairs. They put a fire. They use some of the broken wood that's around. And in the movie, I love the shots. He keeps getting visions of the day his friend died.
Yeah.
Like the same incident over and over again is playing in his head. So when he wakes up in a dream and it's the convenience store all over again. And then he finally comes to, but he figures out that he's been sleepwalking and he's outside the hut.
Ooh.
And bleeding now. And on the inside, all the other guys, one is screaming in his sleep. The other one is also screaming in his sleep, but calling for his wife. And then one of them is upstairs naked, praying to the effigy, chanting.
And his skin is all marked up.
Yeah, and his skin's all marked up. And they're like, okay, we should, you know, of course they're like, we go, maybe we just, you know, we're just a little spooked because I think that's what Hutch says. It's like, oh, we were just, you know, spooked. And I'm like, that's a normal, that's not,
right.
You don't all have nightmares at the same time. And one shouldn't be outside the house, and one should be praying upstairs. Like, you know, like
well,
that.
They were all afraid to admit that they had these horrendous nightmares because each person's, of course, nightmare is
catered to them,
right?
Right.
And so, no one wants to you know, for some of them, they don't want to disclose what they were, what had shocked them or you know scared them like that,
and. I feel like one thing I noticed in the film was as they went more and more through the forest and got more scared or anxious, it's like their personalities were even more heightened or more,
sharper.
Sharp. So Dom, who was aggressive, was more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke was more quiet, would get quieter and more into himself. And then Phil, in the book and the movie, is two different personalities.
Yeah.
In the movie, he's definitely more fearful, but he's willing to talk about the fact that he's scared,
right?
More than the others.
He's like more of a normal.
Yeah, he's
guy.
Probably the most normal,
even keeled.
Yeah.
Right.
In the movie.
Yeah, yeah. And then Hutch, he's probably the most, I guess, brave, but he's trying to keep up a brave face for everyone else.
Yeah.
Right.
But you can tell he's bothered. but he's trying not to show that he's bothered.
Right.
Well, the difference here in the, because the book starts with them in the forest.
Yeah.
So there's no lead up to anything. The prologue is
they find a carcass in the tree.
Seeing the carcass in the tree. And then it's like the first chapter is 4 hours earlier and they're in the forest. So I called it an atmospheric horror because you have this limited setting of a forest. There's nothing else, at least for the book. Everything's happening in that forest. And the forest is almost alive.
Yeah, like in another a way character, right?
Right. Oh. Yeah. So that the forest, the branches are hitting back at them and trees are snapping and falling to block their path. And, so it feels more alive than like in the movie.
Yeah.
In the movie, the forest is dense.
Yeah.
But in the book, it's you can feel that there is it's almost like an enchanted forest and that keeps them from escaping and keeps them from finding their way out. And that they are breaking down in there.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit like Stephen King's Shining, where the house is slowly making the guy crazy. Insane. It's that this forest is getting inside their head and
like breaking and them.
Really doing a number on all of them.
Yeah, because I think my theory for the movie is that it uses basically things, illusions and stuff to keep you basically inside the forest, and it seems like it needs worshipers. Like it wants people to worship it
to keep going. Right?
Yeah, because it's like a god. So it's, at least I was telling mom, like my theory is it's picking the person of the group who would be the least resistant. So, okay. So now we're getting to spoilers. Getting to hard spoilers. You can skip like maybe 5 minutes. Okay. If you want to watch the movie. So Hutch dies and he's the most brave character, and he dies first. The creature kills him first, and I was saying to mom that you would kill him first because he'd be the most resistant,
right?
Like if you're a god who wants to be worshipped and you're using fear to keep people, he's the least fearful,
right?
So he'd be the most like most in your way. Dom as well. He would be the most in your way. He'd be combative and stuff. The two left would be Phil and Luke, who would be, and I don't know if it just picks one of each group, he doesn't pick both people, but I feel like he would keep the people who are most fearful. I guess between the two, Phil is scared, but he's more likely to like run away and stuff. Meanwhile, Luke, it freezes.
Yeah.
He freezes up. So he's most likely to end up staying just stuck, out of.
Right?
Yeah, staying stuck. So he's, kind of picking him because of that. And so you see that, like I said, throughout the film. And I feel like the people, they meet people in the woods who are also praying to the monster, but out of fear more so than like genuine worship. I mean, maybe a few of them genuinely worship it. I'm not really sure, but
right.
But at least it seemed like a few of them were staying there just because they don't want to be killed.
Right, exactly.
And it's very similar. Like they're people who clearly are passive,
right?
So they're willing to just pray to it, then to try alive. To run away, just to stay alive. Yeah. But I feel like his character changed when in the film. When Hutch was grabbed, because before, at least the way he acted, he was very, like I said, passive. If something bad happened, he would look away.
Mm-hmm.
He or get like really freeze up and kind of back away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, it was the most jumpy when like you'd hear a noise and things like that.
Yeah.
But when Hutch was grabbed. That was the first time he, like, ran towards the monster.
Right.
Yeah. Before he would have froze. Even right before in the same scene, he turned off his light to hide.
Yeah.
In the mm-hmm. little tent. And was trying not to be grabbed or see whatever's following right. them. But, yeah, that was the first time where he, like, Hutch just grabbed and he just ran. And the other two are like, where are you go? You know, yeah, don't right. go.
He became yeah. brave.
But he, that was that was his character shifting
yeah.
to more, less passive
yeah.
character.
Which comes in handy
yeah,
for later. The movie.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
I will say, though, that in the movie version where they pitch the tents that they're going to stay in that night, I was like, you just saw carcasses stuck up in a tree.
Yeah.
And you trails had dripping.
And you had visions. All of you had nightmares, these right. awful nightmares.
Right. You had these, right, right. You like, just came from the house and all that. Yeah. And then you go into these stupid little tents to sleep on outside yeah. in a forest that isn't letting you out.
Yeah.
Right. Literally. I was like, no, my big body would be going into the tent with somebody else. I don't care. We're going to sit here together.
Yeah.
Well, just the fact that they wouldn't even consider backtracking because it would add yeah, an extra yeah. day, but it would have been like an extra day to live. So it's right. like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, that's because Dom was like, oh, my knee's killing me. And I'm like, F your knee. I will yeah. drag you out this right. forest. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, there was the scene when they came out in the morning after the staying at that house. And he takes off on a trail. And he's like, you know.
And he's like, oh, look, a trail. That means right. people.
But he goes marching off
yeah.
on his own. And I'm thinking, you don't know where we are.
You don't. Well, also, I was
telling Mom. Why would I follow you?
I was telling Mom, I was like, the trail wasn't there at night.
Yeah.
Right. The trail
appeared.
Popped up. Appeared right. in the morning.
And didn't so. Hutch say, oh, no, but that's not the right yeah. direction.
Yeah. yeah.
Right. And he just kept going. Yeah. And then they all fell in line. I was like, Dom has never been the leader.
No.
Why are you letting him lead?
I think at that point, like, whatever was all in their heads.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, they yeah, came yeah. out quite,
yeah. quite different.
Quite different. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a chuckle moment because yeah. I would have been like,
hell no.
Yeah.
Not going. Yeah. The creature design in the book, or the creature, what the creature looks like in the book and the film, are definitely different. In the book, I feel like it's a lot more vague of a description.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't piece it together.
Because
like, I read it.
Yeah.
yeah.
He was very descriptive.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you. My imagination yeah. could not put all those things
yeah.
together
into something image. To make
yeah.
to make an image.
I think.
It was the weirdest thing. I was like, it sounds bad.
He sent. Because he described it like a tall goat, or like, but the goat creature part, the face of the goat is not right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a tall goat. And then he said human hands.
Mm-hmm.
At night, it looks like a giant black figure, so mm-hmm. it definitely can hide in shadows, and it's very quiet, but smells really bad, like, once it gets close, because that's how Luke in the book notices it around, mm. is he can smell it.
Ugh.
Because he usually smells it first, and then it grabs you. Mm-hmm. So, it smells like wet dog, and then it makes the sound, he said, of a jackal.
Ugh.
So, it's, you know, like a goat jackal. And so, but yeah, so that description, it's like, my brain is like, okay, so I'm like trying to think of like this horrid. Yeah. So it reminded me a little bit of like how a Wendigo description, you would get that yeah. description. Right. Maybe right. I was like, maybe that, but I know there is a creature, I think, in Norse mythology that's similar looking to like a Native American Wendigo, but it's similar looking, but not the same creature.
Right.
But, so I don't know if it was that, but meanwhile the movie has its own
interpretation
of the creature, which the movie creature is really cool. There's one scene where they're walking through the woods and the camera, it's just a long shot of them walking up a hill, and in the trees You could see it move, like, walk away. It's watching them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in the shot, I remember I was looking. I was like, at one point, I was like, that's not a tree. Mm-hmm. And they just walk right past it. And like, that wasn't a tree. Yeah, you can see. Yeah, if you pay attention.
Oh, like, no.
That was not a tree.
It almost seemed like in the movie, it was like, okay, like a goat, but with like a person's upside down head and arms.
Yeah.
In the front of it, which was just like my mind was like, nope.
Yeah, it's like if you can use your imagination, if you took a body, cut off the head, turn it upside down, cut off the head, the feet end up turning into antlers, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess it would have two heads because it's like it's almost two bodies.
Fused together.
Yep. So it's the top portion torso of a body. So the arms would be turning into antlers. The head is gone. The bottom half is another body that is like upside down.
Yeah.
Arms dangling. Yeah. Its face. That's its face. That head is the actual face and has a hood that covers its eyes. And then the underneath that is a animal jaw.
Yes.
And then that's attached to a giant elk body. Demon elk.
Good luck to you.
Yeah.
Good luck to you putting that together.
Yeah. Yeah. His name is Moder,
mm-hmm.
Which is Swedish for mother. But in the movie, it says it's a child of Loki.
Yeah, they bring in the whole Odin mythology.
Yes,
yeah.
They did.
Which someone was saying online that a lot of Loki's children have, because Loki is the god of illusion in Norse mythology, so a lot of his children have illusion powers. And so, and also because Loki and Odin always are fighting, a lot of his kids will do things to mock Odin.
Mm.
So some of the stuff, like putting effigies hanging the bodies up, is kind of a mockery to Odin because Odin made humans. So putting up dead bodies is like, oh, look, I can kill your creation type of thing. So I learned that reading a line about the creature. The creature is not a real Norse creature. It's just like
an
amalgamation of fake, fake Norse mythology things. So there's no creature, but they said it's a Jotun, which is a giant. That's how we translate giant, which they're just part of Norse mythology because it's a bunch of different giants. Loki has a bunch of kids, and so does Odin. Odin has a bunch of giant kids. So,
I mean, overall, I thought for the book, because the book is basically the forest. It's all in the forest. So since there's no break of another setting or something like that, sometimes it's like a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
Descriptions are really, really good, really intense. And
you definitely feel the forest almost attacking them.
But but I felt that it could also be a little quicker.
Yeah.
The big actions. Because of that. But it was, you know, there's another cast of characters towards the end. And and it's just, we were saying that it's how we as storytellers, I guess, when we're using people who are disconnected from society, that they're usually depicted as
weird
and and murderous and like,
because
to their own beat.
Because I was telling mom how in many, it's interesting how universally there's some things that just culturally, despite the fact there's so many cultures and different groups on Earth,
so in this case, these mountain people.
Yeah, it's like how when there's an isolated group, community, we don't look favorably on them. So like in America, you make jokes, at least on the East Coast, about like the Appalachian mountain people. And you make jokes about people in the country or in small towns in the South.
Mm-hmm.
and how, like, oh, you know, mm-hmm. maybe backwards or everyone is inbred or some weird thing like that. And yeah. in England, very much the same thing. They make jokes about their little villages all the time.
Really?
Yeah, all the time. And then same thing with, like, when I was watching, I've been watching a bunch of Norwegian films, and they make, there was, like, one character in a troll movie I was watching where he's like, oh, don't get wander too far. The backcountry people might grab you. So it's oh, just, wow. I was like, it's interesting how
yeah, I mean, everyone I think, you know, I has think the about same it, thing I about. Think every, almost
yeah.
all cultures have some yeah. group that they have demonized in
like
a way
outliers,
that,
yep.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so this one had the same yeah. kind of thing. And, you know, because it reminds me, you know, the movie with Reynolds.
What is his name?
No. Old dude. Back 80s Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds.
I was like, there's another Reynolds?
Yeah. But you remember when he did the movie where they were weekend, kind of like weekend warriors and went into the backwoods?
Oh, God, and, yes.
Right. And the yes. same, and what happened to him yes. and blah, 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 blah. So it's that same kind of feel.
Deliverance. Oh, good Lord, that movie is so scary.
Yeah. But it's the same kind of thing where you had these wackadoo people. Mm-hmm.
In isolated areas of the world.
But they were integral to what was happening on that mountain. And Luke had to deal with them. And that was both in the book and in
yeah.
the movie.
Yeah. Yes, and he so kind nice. Of, in the movie, he does... Yeah, it's all about him conquering his fear.
Yeah, yeah.
Of that kind of arc of yeah. of so getting
of
over his friend's death,
getting out of there. Yeah,
yeah. 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 But I enjoyed it a lot. Again, I loved the creature design. That's what made me want to watch. I thought the special effects scenes were really good. And I would definitely recommend watching it.
Yeah. And the forest was in Romania, you said?
Yeah, they filmed in Romania.
So, yeah.
So, oh wow.
So. Yeah. But, mm-mm. All right. Well, the, switching on to, this is just, this part is random, as you can tell.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we were going to chat about just for a few minutes was social media, but I also wanted to bring up that I did an audit of my streaming services, and as they raised their prices, I was like, okay, I've decided that I'm getting rid of several, and I saw that Amazon Prime is now going to charge you $2.99 extra for no ads with your video streaming services.
Well, the joke's on them, because I've been drinking more water and I've been needing to go to the bathroom more often, so it works out.
Well, the thing is, I'm like, I think it said early 2024 or something,
yeah,
like that. You'll get emails and stuff, but I was like, I'm not paying you $2.99 extra a month,
yeah,
because of the ads. So I'll deal with the ads.
Exactly. Exercise. Take a break.
HBO, I decided to let that go. That will leave us in at the end of October, because we got it on a special on Gabby's account for $100, and they're going to be $150 at the end of October. And I was like, nope. So that one's gone. We're getting rid of.
Disney is also one of those where it's such a limited library, in that, like, unless you really want to watch Disney movies
and you have younger
and Marvel
kids,
the thing is, like, I don't have any children, so there's no desire for me to watch, like,
Star Wars world is really
not at
$18.99
a month.
No.
Well, you see, we have the package.
Yeah, we have package.
We have the Hulu, ESPN, and Disney.
Yeah, but
bundle.
It's kind of, again, I'm like, I like Marvel and I like Star Wars and
Marvel
stuff,
too.
But not enough to pay each month just to have access to Star Wars and Marvel.
What I've
each
noticed
month.
With these streaming services is that I don't always look at them each month.
Yeah, you're right. That's
that
true.
And so for, like, Disney, I hadn't watched a Disney film since last year when I was binging Marvel, it was this year or last year, but the Marvel movies. Mm. And so I was like, okay, so there's several months that I'm not watching. And the same thing with like Peacock. And I was going to cancel Peacock, but I think when I tried to cancel the last time, they dropped me to like $1.99 a month.
That's great.
For 6 months. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'll hold on to that one until March of next year.
I think Peacock is probably one of the cheapest.
But I haven't looked at Peacock in months.
Oh, I looked at Peacock, but they have... I watch Premier League. That's
Okay. But you see, I don't...
So.
So the thing is, I find that... I think if we were to really audit what we look at and how often we look at something, you don't look at as much as you think you do with some of these streaming services. Yeah. And then if there's a specific movie that I need to see or want to see, I can just rent it
for like $2.99 because I'm not watching like 50 movies a month.
At Amazon Prime and not pay that month. Or... you pay the month for just that month, and then you binge cancel whatever is in there.
Yeah,
because even like HBO, I watch a few movies sometimes with it, depending on the month if they have good movies. But it's really like having it for Harry Potter, which I already have the DVDs and Blu-rays of Harry Potter, so I can just throw it in my PlayStation and like I don't need HBO. I already have the film, but it's just like the convenience of just hitting a button and it works.
Yeah.
But you could just buy the DVDs or Blu-ray, which or buy it on Amazon, and then you have it digitally forever.
Yeah,
right.
Or like as long as Amazon's around.
I was going to say after that discussion we had that one time where they're like, "Well, you got to pray that the platform doesn't go
the
away."
Platform,
and it's like, but I've built my library.
So anyway, so that's what we're heading to, and. So, you know, while these services are raising their money, raising their prices and so on, I was like, that's fine. I'm not paying it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so. What's interesting with the writers, the strike that's going on and the whole feuding with the AI stuff and just, you know, I think maybe in the foreseeable future, the prices will go down because... I mean, I don't know. People are getting upset about it, right? That the prices are going up.
I think opposite. I think it'll go up because then they'll say that now they have to pay the actors
because there's
and the writers and stuff.
Despite the fact
that the shareholders don't want you to carve out their money to
this was like, despite the fact that the CEO just bought his fifth yacht.
He's
going to
put
that,
it on the,
that's unfortunate because you would think that they have to really look at the distribution disparities first. But they're not going to, the greed is going to win.
If you bring the A-list artists to the streaming services more than they are now. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay them whatever it is the union wants and the writers, whatever the union wants. They're just going to transfer that to the subscribers.
The subscribers,
and the price will go up. I mean, look at how much Prime, not even the video, not for video, but just Amazon Prime for delivery has gone up.
Yeah,
you remember back when we first
started? Yeah, it was awesome.
Now it's $139 a year.
Think of Netflix. Netflix now is super expensive.
It used to be like $7.99.
Yeah, it was the cheap one. Yeah,
it was the cheap one. So you know, we invite any actor, director, writer onto our podcast to talk about... what's currently going on. Any one of our listeners, if you are one of those things, just reach out to us.
So, and then for the social media thing, there was, and like I said, these are random topics, so nothing's related to the last topic. But I was looking through social media and I saw all these authors, especially on Threads, because so that's the new thing that Instagram or Meta, not Instagram, Meta, has put out in competition to Twitter, X, whatever it is. And so authors are trying to get their following up again, because again, you've left one platform where you had right. all these followers, and now you're starting from zero. And one of the things, a couple of things that they've said that sometimes drives me insane is this frantic call for authors to all operate in the same way or in the same manner. And this thing of, you know, we're in this together and so on. And in my irritable mood, I'm like, we're not in this together. Yeah. It's like, you have your business, I have my business.
Yeah.
We have different goals. We have different visions.
We're
we have
different people. Ways.
Right. Yeah. And so it's not a united front in the yeah. sense that, yes, and I understand authors supporting other authors. That is not what I'm talking about. It's this, when people get online and they give rules of what authors should do, how authors should interact, how authors should talk, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm like...
Or even sometimes it's like, oh, because I've seen the same thing where they'll say kind of like, oh, indie authors should do this together. And it's like, why? And the whole point of indie author... or indie is being able to do anything you want versus right. a set, no set of
a
things
set,
to
a
do.
Set rules or a set way.
Yeah. yeah. Why do so we want to go back rules. To the goalkeeper yeah. era?
So so one of the things they were saying, which is what got on my nerves, is that they were like, authors need to get on, you need to be using social media and you need to interact with people. You need to show yourself. Go mm-hmm. on, you know, have these videos or reels or whatever and show people, you know, the real you and yeah. blah, 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 blah. And then somebody else responded as a reader or whatever saying, yeah, I need to know who you are because if I think you're boring, then I know that I don't want to read your book.
Yeah. Oh, that
and
is,
I was like,
I was like, I would, and I would never want you to read my book.
But exactly. here's the thing. yeah. I was like, what does the book yeah. have to do with my personality?
Exactly. Yeah.
You are, as an artist, you are creating a work that is, it's not separate from who you are because you're pouring whatever into it.
Right.
But we have come into this idea of, we're such performers now that you have to entertain me to convince me right. that your product is worthy. And if that was the case, a lot of these actors, you wouldn't go watch their movie because they're boring as heck in an right. interview.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But that's not important.
Look at Cillian Murphy. He's an extremely private guy. He doesn't do a whole lot of public things.
He's the one that's in Oppenheimer.
Yeah, he's in Oppenheimer. He's a very private man.
They have compilations of this yeah. man's unemotive self.
Yeah. And that doesn't change his acting.
Right.
He's an amazing,
he's a brilliant
and a brilliant actor.
And right. very smart. Yeah. And very,
I love his films and I love his.
He doesn't care about yeah. the PR stuff.
Yeah. He made his product and then you go and consume it.
Like, so right. to tie somebody's product to their personality to me is quite illogical and a little infantile because
yes, it is.
Because you're not giving way for writers who may be on a spectrum, who may be may have some kind of visible disability, who may not want to be online in that way,
right.
and so you want to judge them. And I think in this. In now where everybody is kind of like, in a way, they come up to you and it's like, well, who are you? Who do you vote for? You know, how do you, right. what do you think about this? And people are then judging you based on those answers. And then, okay, maybe I'll read your book or not read your
yeah,
book
it
because
has nothing
you
to do
feel
with
this
your
way.
Book. It's so yeah. crazy.
I mean, it's weird because like, I was trying to think about it. I was like, I never cared about the author whenever I read a book. I've read, you know, of course, a ton of books. And especially when I was in high school, I'd read a lot of young adult. I did not know who those authors were. I did not give a crap of who the authors were.
But I think
even when I looked at like a big one like Twilight, I didn't care who Stephanie Meyer was. Harry Potter, I didn't even know J.K. was the freaking author until the sixth book. Like I just, I did not care.
But I think that in the earlier era of before social media or the early era of social media, people hadn't tied your social media presence to your product.
I never did that. Like, I just was like, I enjoy your product and I will keep consuming as long as I keep enjoying it.
I mean, but over meeting them in terms of going to like book signings just to say, hey, I love your work. But in terms of like delving into their private life, that held no interest for me.
But I think readers are being told that, again, going back to my original thing, is that where authors are saying, this is what you have to do, people.
Which is crazy.
This is what you have. So then the readers are like, this is what I want my authors to do. And if you don't do this, then I'm not reading you. Because they go, well, there's so many books. I'm not picking your book unless I have a connection with you. Why do you need a connection with me?
Yeah, that's what I was like, don't read my book. Yeah.
Right. Why do you need a connection with me? And so I feel that authors have, and specific genres more than other genres, have created this fake symbiotic attitude that you have to do these performances to get the readers, and you have trained the readers to expect that. And so it bothers me because it doesn't take into consideration the artist's
personal
way of wanting to communicate.
Yeah.
You're like, it's either this way or no way.
Yeah.
And, there's an author that I follow, Chris Fox, and he writes fantasy, and he is one of the early self-pub people who was very successful and so on. And he was very active in the beginning. He went to the conferences, he did the collaborations and so on, and the networking. And then he did a hard stop with all of that. Went away for a little bit and came back, and you know, he has a young family now, and he said his priorities have changed, and he's no longer going to the conferences, he's no longer doing book swaps, he's no longer doing whatever he's no longer agonizing where his book ranks, and he said he makes, you know, he just posted his numbers. And you can go on YouTube. His account name is Chris, Chris Fox. And he shares his numbers and details. But in the summation in his newsletter, he was saying how he made $30,000 profit in a year. So he's made more than the $30,000, but that's clearing expenses. And while people are like, well, that's not much, it allows him to live his life the way he wants, and he's married. Maybe his wife is making big bucks or whatever, but he is enjoying life on his terms, writing the books and launching it the way he wants. And he's like, I'm not going to run around and do all this stuff that everybody's now preaching on social media that you have to do and you should do and all of that stuff. And then you burn yourself out.
Yeah. Because you're forcing yourself to do something you basically don't want to do. And then you end up with these weird parasocial relationships with readers that it's like you probably don't even want to be in.
Right.
No, you never wanted to cultivate it. And then your time is spent doing that instead of writing, which you're...
And I'm convinced that a lot of these people who are following these authors aren't necessarily their fan base, you know?
Which is crazy.
It's like you probably follow them, you like them or whatever. Maybe you've read a book or two, but you're more into just
them talking
and interacting with you online than their actual work. Because I want my author to continue writing books. Like, don't waste time entertaining me online. If you've got especially a great series that I'm waiting on, go write.
Yeah.
Go,
I don't think there's
go
any
relax and do your thing.
On social media, I don't think I have any author that I'm following, except for maybe John Green and Hank Green. They're probably the only two, and I follow them not because of their writing, but because of a bunch of other stuff they do. Right. But I have read their books, and
but
I love them.
But it's not your expectation, though. It's
no.
Right?
And it's just... Yeah, I'm like, if they write another book, cool. I'll probably read it. But but I like so and other authors, most of them, I just check back on the Amazon if the book came out and I'm like, okay, no, or it's coming out December, cool, I'll come back in December. Like, I don't need to see your life on Instagram.
Yeah.
For me to enjoy you.
And the thing is, I'm not on Facebook anymore. I mean, I have an account there, but I don't interact. I don't go on there. So it's I'd rather spend my time writing the next book. Mm-hmm. And they always say the best way to for your career to have longevity is to write the next book. It's not spending hours coming up with content for the accounts. And you see people complaining now that, oh, I'm not getting as many likes, my stuff isn't getting seen, da 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 da. So then that requires you to then go sit and
do a bunch of stuff
and figure out what the heck to do and how to come up with more reels and all this other stuff to get somebody's attention. Go write the book.
I mean, I say to any future readers of mine, because I'm sure by the time you listen, this will be well into the future. I'm not going to post anything of my personal life online. You know that already. You probably know that already if you're following me on Instagram. But I am not a. I'm not because
that was
to
the
do
other
that.
Thing. Somebody says, "Well, I'm just tired of authors that just talk about buy my book." They're like, "I want to know about your pets. I want to know about
You'll never see
that's
my cat.
Fine if the person wants to do it, but stop making it a rule.
Yeah.
But if I don't give you the insight to my life, that somehow you're going to punish me with not buying my book. I just don't get that. So I don't know. But those are thoughts that came across today. And
I feel like with the parasocial relationships I see people having with celebrities, I'm like, I am just one to keep an arm's length at people that I don't know. And it's like, despite the fact that you may like an author or a actor or whoever, director, influencer, and like, they don't know you. You may know them, a part of them, not even all of them. You know a part of them.
Yeah.
Right. You know a facade that they put on. But you do not know them. You don't know what they do on a Thursday night. You don't know how they interact with their wife or husband or whoever, or their kids. You don't know what they're like when they're upset or angry. It's like you just don't know them, and that's okay. You don't need to.
You don't need to.
You don't need to know how they
are. Just appreciate the art, the product.
Yeah.
Wish we could get back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Switching over to Julia's Corner.
Sit back and relax and welcome to Julia's Corner. Today, we are going to talk about an article I found on treehugger.com. Don't worry, ladies. It's about sustainability for all.
Okay.
It was an article written by Josh Liu, updated April 20th, 2022. 8 places to find real buried treasure. You know what a sucker I am for this kind of thing. And I'm hoping you guys will want to go on a trip with me soon to one of these places.
Not Sweden. Forest.
No, I couldn't. You know what? And I was trying to tie it in to what we're talking about. But that movie was so scary. I was like, let's just give it some time. Okay. All right. So the first place, and I've heard of this before because every so often articles will pop up like, oh, 8-year-old found diamond, blah, blah, blah. But I digress. It's the first place they recommend is Crater of Diamonds State Park in Arkansas. And it's a place where after failed attempts at mining and everything, it became a 900-acre tourist attraction that's open to the public. You can actually go there, and you can keep what you find. Any takers?
It kind of lost me at Arkansas, but...
I knew it. I knew it. Oh, my gosh. I'm never going to get there. And if I go, it'll be by myself.
I'll be at the border waiting for you.
Well, it's just going to get worse because the next place is in Bedford, Virginia.
Just kidding.
And this is basically a place where there was a legend, you know, Thomas Beale, a group of men. They brought a large treasure that they found in the American West to their homes and buried it. So good luck to people who want to go and try to decipher some of the codes that he left alluding to this buried treasure.
I mean, he's trolling everyone, and just he made some codes and then says, yeah, there's a treasure at the end, but didn't.
What year are we talking about?
17-something?
1700s?
1819. Okay. I knew you would ask that question. Darn it. No, but he wrote three ciphers and, you know, it was about, like, the treasure. They were people were only able to decipher one, and it would spoke about the treasure, not its location. So they don't know if it's, like, real or not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The third place is Jade Cove in California. Anyone interested in jade? No? No interest? Okay. No. Basically,
like the
stone. I'm kind of waiting for us to get to the Caribbean. I mean, why are we still in America?
All right. Okay. Stay firmly in California, people. Uh-huh. It's a semi-precious stone in the waters of Jade Cove. It's like a very scenic seaside area in Big Sur. Scuba divers tend to find the largest stones offshore, but a casual treasure seeker such as okay, I'm going to have to say myself instead of ourselves. Okay, fine, whatever. sometimes find the gemstones right there on the sand.
Okay.
Okay. Number four, Auburn, California. This was. Stop laughing. After gold was discovered there in 1848, thousands of miners came to the area. So basically,
is there still gold?
You can pan for some gold.
Oh, and there's still gold. Okay.
Yeah, there's still gold there. You're limited to like taking 15 pounds of minerals out. And they've actually arrested people for trespassing there. So you can prospect if you like.
I guess I'm surprised that there's still gold left. I thought it was all gone, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, it's still there. But I mean, I don't think you're going to find, like, nuggets. I think it's really
the
small.
The speckles of gold left.
Am I reeling you in, Gabby? Are you interested in any of this? No? Okay, fine. Number five, Ozark Hills in Missouri. Any takers?
Yeah, no.
Okay. So Joseph Slater, in the mid-18th century, he was a mine owner. And he floated large amounts of high-grade copper down to New Orleans. So there's this place you can go. But unfortunately, actually, that's not true. As I'm reading further down, he and his daughter basically filed a claim, but in the wrong area on purpose to kind of hide the location. And then he moved away, and he was never able to say where it was. So good luck to you. You want to go and try to find that. Six is Amelia Island in Florida. Any takers?
I do like Amelia Island, but again, Florida.
Well, let me just tell you a little bit about it. It's unfound treasure that could be sitting along the Atlantic coast of Florida. Apparently, small finds have included hundreds of gold coins. It's like a little trail breadcrumb Oh, I'm sorry. Breadcrumb Trail. I need more caffeine. From a vessel that was carrying gold. They're thinking it's like a lost treasure ship that was a Spanish ship. I guess went down somewhere around there, and every so often some coins float up or whatever.
Yeah. I know you, like, I know they said in, at least in the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean islands and stuff, like, if you find treasure, you have to, of course, declare it. And so people always, like, if they end up finding, maybe they go scuba diving and they find some, like, gold and then you don't say a thing, and then they go on a plane and usually get arrested, but it's apparently you're supposed to.
Yeah, you can't just take it.
Take the treasure.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because there's one salvage company, Queen Jewels, that now owns the rights to the 1715 Fleet shipwreck site. I didn't even know you could do that. And there's up to 24 subcontractors signed up to search the site along with it. So maybe you have to.
I think you could end up taking, like, say, if you found some scuba diving, I think you can take it. You just have to register it, but usually pay tax on whatever it's worth. So that's why people don't want to say it, because you're paying a tax on whatever you find.
See, that's not good. See, I go back to the diamond crater in Arkansas.
Again, I will go to the border with you.
But I guess the thing is, though,
off with an Apple AirTag, Michelle. I don't think so.
I think the thing is with diamonds, though, there's so many diamonds. They're not actually that precious of a rock.
But they're just inflated. But
you can make anything. Like, you can just get some coals from, you know, Lowe's and get them made into diamonds and get a really beautiful diamond that's cheap.
I've got some ashes on my mantle place.
Yeah, like, you can make diamonds out of anything. It's carbon.
Oh my god.
You could do that, though. People do that. They take their family members' ashes and make diamonds out of them. Because you can make diamonds. They're blue, usually. It's like a blue diamond.
I don't think we'll go into the next two. I think we're going to cut loose on this one. And unless people want to press their loved ones into diamonds. And then you have... Then, wow, look on your mantle, people. You don't have to go to Arkansas.
I mean... Because the diamond market is owned by the De Beers family, and or like heavily owned by, not all of them,
the cartel of diamonds.
Yeah, basically. And so they made it an expensive item, but it is easy to find and get diamonds. Diamonds are plentiful around Earth, so
and
they're not really
worth that much. There's a documentary about the whole diamond industry, it's quite crazy that they have managed to make people
think it's worth
this stupid rock.
Also, there's a lot more now, like, people who companies that you can make diamonds. Like I said, you can just give maybe your ashes, but even if you give other things, they'll just make a diamond for you, a factory-made diamond.
I heard about, what do you call them, lab-grown diamonds.
And that's basically what they are. And it's funny to see, like, online jewelers will be like, no, those aren't as good. Meanwhile, if you look at it, they're about the same. No one, the average person, cannot tell the difference, and it doesn't matter. It's like no one cares. Still, and you can maybe, like, one guy was saying, he's like, you can get an even more clear diamond, a clearer diamond than something that you find in a rock.
Well, I'm all for upsetting any kind of monopolistic thing. Mm-hmm. So if they find ways to
make a diamond,
dilute the market, I'm fine with that.
Also, if you wanted to, like, because I think it was like
I want a diamond.
They were like, if you want to really show off, like, wealth or whatever through jewelry, they're like, rubies are the more rare.
Yeah, there are more.
Like, if
rare
you want
gems,
If you want a rare gem, diamond is not what you go with.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, like, Diana's ring, Princess Diana's ring.
Isn't it jade?
It was
not jade. It's ruby.
It wasn't a ruby. It was a big blue,
big blue diamond
thing. But it was, better.
More rare.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, diamonds are not hard to find.
I mean, but
but if you want a diamond, get a diamond.
Treasure, I think. Yeah, the finding the treasure aspect of it.
I mean, that would be. I mean, that'd still be cool if you found one and then you can put it.
But you can. But you can create. But what I'm saying is, like, you can have a vacation around one of these places.
Yes.
And then you go do your digging.
Yeah.
And then enjoy. Because the California places, I mean, where is that? North or south?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I might have said where it was.
Well, you said one was near Big Sur, but I didn't know where Big Sur is.
No, I don't know where Big Sur is, but the one with the jade, the Amelia Island one.
Amelia Island was Jade. Jade Cove was
in California.
Right.
But we're talking about Florida, right?
No.
I'm sorry.
Unless you wanted to do Florida as your vacation.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you.
Because Amelia Island is a good place to go. It's historical. It's beautiful. Spanish came through there first.
Michelle, go to Arkansas.
I actually did Arkansas once for a writing conference. But at the time, Twisted Eye Huckabee wasn't governor.
I mean, again, if you want, because like I said, diamonds are nice. So if you want a diamond, I say go for your diamond. I'm just saying you don't have to spend so much money to get a diamond. Yes. That's what I'm saying. It's like, get your diamond.
Saying. No, get a nice old diamond pendant.
Don't spend thousands of dollars.
Yeah. I've got diamond ear studs. I've got diamond pendants. Yeah. I have my little diamonds.
Yeah, I have little diamond studs I bought for myself.
And ruby is my birthstone. So I had a ruby ring.
I don't know what my birthstone is.
Emerald's mine. What do you mean?
What are you?
I'm
August.
I'll look it up.
Isn't it peridot?
Peridot.
Peridot.
Isn't it green?
Yeah, it's a really green. Pretty lime green.
Yeah, I think it's a peridot.
Now I want to know.
It's it is peridot.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's really pretty.
Don't you have a peridot?
I have a peridot. I have a peridot rosary.
I do the peridot rosary.
And a peridot, some earrings.
Yeah, and studs. Yeah. Studs or something, yeah.
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 I think, too, I guess it's like, when it comes to, I guess, jewelry, I hate gold. Like, I hate the color gold. I don't know why, but it's just like, I don't like yellow that much, so.
Yeah, I prefer yellow, silver.
Same. So any yellow, goldy color, it's not my favorite thing, so. It's not a thing that I like to wear.
I like Guyanese gold because it's 22 carats, so it's a yellower gold it's more gold than the gold in like Jared's display store.
Jared's. So, just kidding.
So I and then we have silver bangles from Guyana too.
I like silver.
But Guyana is known for their gold.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who go.
There's a lot of gold
that go there, and then they put mercury into the water system.
Oh God!
So,
but people have gotten rich over just finding gold.
Yeah,
like it's old school.
Yeah,
it's like old school Western in America where we just found gold in places and people got rich overnight. It's like
so they're all digging in the forest. My uncle has a gold mine.
Yeah.
That he does.
Yeah.
That's just like insane.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're killing the environment.
Yeah. Because you need to use a bunch of chemicals to get it out.
Yeah.
Oh God. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's awful.
It's very bad for the environment.
And then
gold.
The guy who had purchased our house, he had a whole bunch of businesses, but he also had a gold mine and he would go in for like weeks. So every time we needed something to be done with the house, finalizing the house and stuff, we'd have to wait for him to come out of the bush.
Yeah.
Oh, it was like a big production.
You can't make this
and then if he missed, like one time he came out and like, you know, days later he comes out and then the court or whatever postponed the thing. And so then he's like, well, I've got to get back in. because when he, before he leaves, he shuts everything down because he's got people working it. So he shuts everything down, and then, but shutting it down to like take days to shut down mine. The mining and whatever, and then he comes out and he's like, you know, it didn't go as planned, and so then he's like, I'm going back in, which means that he's gonna be gone for another set of weeks. Oh my gosh, it was insane. But you know, he did, it was like an all cash thing because it's gold.
It's gold,
right. It's gold, so you're basically coming out with gold chunks.
Yeah, which to me is fascinating of why gold is still a big metal, because it's one of the softer metals. It's useless in terms of like you can't build anything with it. It's just the look of gold. So I'm like, what is the worth? Because it might be used in electronics, but not even really. It's like other minerals are more useful, practical. But gold is like it's a shitty metal. It's like, it's not that great of a metal.
Silver, people. Silver.
In terms of its usefulness, I'm like, what's
because there's magic powers in it. You just haven't unlocked it.
I guess I'm just like, I don't understand the
native people of the world.
Yeah. Like,
using their gold.
I guess if there was an apocalypse and all of us, you know, you ran out of stuff, like it's a zombie movie or something. If someone's like, I have a bundle of gold, it's like, and you have water, food, something more practical. Like, if you told me you have gold, that means
I can make a shiny bowl. I don't see what the problem is. I don't.
I mean, even like gold is not even good a weapon. It's not a good metal. It's a soft metal, so it melts easily.
It's good for fillings.
There you go.
And to put between your teeth space.
You can have gold for fillings. Because I'm not sure what it's useful for.
Well, that's it for Julia's Corner.
And on that note, Julia, what do we say?
Stay prickly.
See ya.